Chapter 1, in which Rudy makes an entrance. In the course of his friendship with Rudy Miller, Mike Webster had seen some terrible things. Dawn, over a small lake in Ontario, from the vantage point of a rapidly disintegrating raft. A conga line of camp counselors, red-faced and jovial, shaking their collective tails to Lion Sleeps Tonight, led by Rudy himself. On innumerable occasions, the cumulative garbage created by 200 or so healthy young males trapped on an island together, and, though thankfully only blurrily recollected, on the weekend after they graduated high school, the interior of what Mike was pretty sure was a bar full of transsexuals in lumberjack shirts. None of these had really prepared him for the horror that met his eyes as he stepped off the bus at the Camp Algonquian Island dock. Dust swirled around him as the bus pulled away with a hiss of hydraulic brakes. For a moment he thought about running after it, but then, sighing heavily, he shouldered his duffel bag and went forward to meet his fate. His fate, apparently, was about 15 guys, largely indistinguishable from one another, dressed in shorts and t-shirts with camp logos on them. They all seemed to be bellowing greetings, slapping one another on the back with what looked to Mike to be painful force, their perfect white teeth gleaming in the morning sun. Sucking in a deep breath, Mike muttered "clones" under his breath, and headed towards what he assumed was the head counselor, who was frowning over a clipboard. "Hi," started Mike, dropping his bag and holding out his hand. "I'm Mike Webster," said the head counselor, ticking off a line on his clipboard. "You're late. Was there anybody else on the bus with you?" Mike blinked and let his hand drop. Well, no one else got off here, no. Is Rudy here? Rudy Miller?" He glanced over at the other guys on the dock. The man frowned even more darkly. "No, he's late, too. I hope this isn't typical of you two." Mike had just opened his mouth to respond when there was a sudden commotion behind him. The dock lay beside a narrow, straight road that ran the length of the lake. Along this road, like a mirage in the morning sun, came a sports car, kicking up dust as it sped up and down the undulating lakeshore road. Behind Mike and the head counselor, an excited chorus of interest broke out among the other boys. "Whoa, nice car!" someone yelled appreciatively. The growling purr of the engine came closer. The car slowed down infinitesimally as it approached the dock, before the driver spun it into the small car park adjoining the dock, breaking just a hair's breadth from the edge of the bay wall. The babble from the counselors redoubled, and several of them jogged over to admire the vehicle up close, calling out questions to the driver as he extracted himself from the car. "Excuse me," Rudy Miller said, his voice utterly bored. "Can you not breathe on my paintwork?" 20 minutes later, Mike was miserably aware that, shared adventures among the transsexual population of Ontario, occasional lengthy email exchanges notwithstanding, a lot could change between two people in the space of a year. After removing a large bag from the trunk of his car and agreeing placidly to the head counselor's suggestion that he must be Rudy Miller, Rudy had been swallowed into the crowd of clones, who were excitedly demanding details of his wheels. Mike, who had been in the car before, knew all too well the speed that could be attained by a driver with the requisite nerve and sang-froid, had kept clear of the conversation, and now found himself sitting alone towards the front of the passenger boat currently skimming over the calm lake. He sighed heavily, turning to look at the rapidly approaching shoreline. The camp looked a lot smaller than he remembered, the white paintwork of the cabins visible between the trees, the rustic cabin of the mess hall a large bulk at one end of the camp. There was a row of canoes on the beach, and a figure in overalls applying paint to their upturned hulls. Unconsciously he heaved out another breath. It all looked like good, clean, energetic fun, absolutely the last thing he would have chosen for his summer break. "So," a voice said from behind him, "I'm thinking we build another raft, one that doesn't sink this time, paddle back to shore, and head for Montreal." Grinning, Mike turned. "Why Montreal?" Rudy Miller's face was expressionless as ever. Legal drinking age of 18, French accents, what more could a man ask for? Behind him, several of the clones were looking bewildered and pissed that Rudy should have abandoned their male bonding moment in favor of talking to the skinny loser at the front of the boat. "Saddle up, guys," the head counselor suddenly stood up and shouted. "We're here." "Deep joy," said Rudy, swinging his duffel bag onto his shoulder. "Say, do you think that beaver still lives in the woods?" The clones on the boat were cheering and whooping as they came into dock. Several other boys, who had obviously arrived earlier, were lending a hand, tying up and hefting bags. At the back of the line to climb out onto the shore, Rudy sighed, and quietly, so only Mike could hear, muttered, "Alcatraz, again." It seemed particularly apt to Mike that he should start his career as a camp counselor, gulping down laughter, while Rudy looked on, unperturbed as always. Chapter 2. Clones, More Clones, and Cabin 13. The majority of the clones were still whooping and hollering 10 minutes later, as they were led into the mess hall by the head counselor. There was a lot of manly back-slapping and good-natured shoving going on in the main herd. Mike and Rudy brought up the rear. "Your parents let you bring the car, then?" Mike ventured, finally. "I'm afraid I had to insist," said Rudy, his lip curling slightly as they entered the mess hall behind the others. "How else are we going to make a quick getaway?" They found seats at the end of one of the long tables set up in the mess hall, leaving a few empty chairs between them and the other boys. "Let's get started, men," shouted the head counselor, setting his clipboard on the table. "I'm John. I'll be the head counselor here for the summer. This is my 5th year at Camp Algonquin Island as a counselor, and my 8th summer if you include the times when I was a camper. And I have to tell you, those 8 summers really have been some of the best of my life." The clones cheered again. "So, let's go round the table and introduce ourselves," John continued. "Tell us your name, why you're here this summer, and something that makes you special." The boy nearest John sprang to his feet. "I'm Nick. I'm here because I want to help form young minds and make sure these kids have a great summer. I'm studying physical education at Lakehead in Thunder Bay, and I'm a provincial wrestling champion." Beside Mike, Rudy made a sort of gagging noise at this pronouncement. The next boy jumped up as the applause for Nick the wrestler died down. "Hi, I'm Steve. I'm so excited to be here. There's nothing more important than teaching young people moral values and healthy habits. I'm on a hockey scholarship at Laurentian, and I'm majoring in sports science." The clones all clapped again, and Mike shrank further back into his seat. The next few introductions went by in a blur of single-syllable names and sporting prowess, until eventually it was Rudy's turn. "Hello, I'm Marmalade Lightsinger III," Rudy began as he stood up. Two or three of the clones tittered, and Mike, desperately fighting back laughter, hissed "Rudy!" at him. Rudy looked down at Mike. "What? Oh, fine." He sighed and continued in a bored tone, "I'm Rudy Miller." He sat down. The clones looked at him expectantly. Rudy nudged Mike with his elbow. "Wake up, your turn." John frowned at them both. It was clearly already his expression of choice for dealing with Mike and Rudy. "Wait, you didn't tell us anything about yourself." Rudy looked blandly back at John. "What did you want to know again?" "Why you're here," began John. "It was this or jail. I thought hard labor was safer than prison showers," said Rudy. Mike kicked him under the table. The other clones stared at him, jaws ajar. "What? Stop kicking me!" Rudy turned to glare at Mike. "Oh, all right. My parents made me get this job." John stuttered as he added, "And something special about you." "He has a very active imagination," said Nick the wrestler meanly. Rudy blinked at him slowly. "That too." No one clapped. Rudy turned to Mike and cleared his throat pointedly. "Hi, I'm, Mike started nervously, coming up to his feet. "Wait, Rudy Miller? Not THE Rudy Miller. From McGill?" A large, red-faced, red-haired guy interrupted. He had introduced himself as Chuck and was some sort of football player. "The runner? The one they were all tipping for the Olympics next year?" Rudy said nothing as excited chatter broke out around the table. "Were," said Nick, smirking. "Wrecked his knee, right?" Chuck said. "Out of the running, so to speak, at least over the summer." "Well, are you?" asked an as yet unnamed boy. "The Rudy Miller?" "I'm certainly a Rudy Miller. I don't have exclusive rights to the name," Rudy answered blandly. "Now, if you don't mind, you're interrupting my colleague here." Mike said, intelligently. "Your name?" Rudy prompted, helpfully. Yeah. Irritated, Mike glared at Rudy. "I'm Mike. I'm pre-med at UT. I thought it would be fun to work here this summer. I've survived being friends with Rudy for 5 years." He sat down again abruptly. There was a short silence, and one or two half-hearted attempts at applause. Then the next guy in the circle got to his feet. Mike hissed at Rudy under the cover of Chris the Championship Swimmer's introduction. "You hurt your knee?" Rudy raised an eyebrow at him, and said, "Shh, I'm listening," before turning back to watch as the introductions continued. Only one guy stood out to Mike among the remaining counselors. He was tall and lanky, with a droopy moustache. He introduced himself as Sam, and said nothing more than he was at the Ontario College of Art and Design and hated sports. The clones looked at him with instant loathing, and Mike immediately felt a great kinship with him. "Right," said John heartily, as the introductions finished. "I'll announce the cabin and work assignments, leave you guys to settle until dinner, with our special guest tonight." He handed out a bunch of sheets to the boy closest to him. "Pass around the timetables. We have 3 days to complete your training program, get to know one another, and put the finishing touches on the site before the campers start arriving Saturday. We'll get an early start, so set your alarm clocks." Mike grabbed a copy of the timetable and looked with dismay at the first activity, scheduled at 7 a.m. John picked up his clipboard. "We have 18 cabins this year. Number 1 through 10 will have 10 campers. Numbers 11 through 18 will have 15 campers. The bigger cabins will have 2 counselors for the first time this year, and those of you with special responsibilities will bunk in with a cabin counselor to help out." He started to reel off numbers and names. "Cabin 1, Chris Stevens. Cabin 2. As he called names, guys picked up their bags and set off towards the cabins. "Cabin 13, John said, with a glint in his eye. "Rudy Miller." Rudy sighed gustedly. "Oh, not again." John reached the end of the list. Mike's name had not been called. John looked over the page on his clipboard. "Special responsibilities," he said importantly. "Computer room, Mike Webster. Football coach, Chuck Daniels." "Ah, a special clone," said Rudy, as they walked over to their bags. "Your mother will be so proud." Mike glared at him and stalked over to pick up his duffel. The big redhead caught up with him at the door. "Looking for a bunkmate, Miller," he said, elbowing Mike out of the way. "Nice car, by the way." "So you sit on the boat," Rudy replied disinterestedly. "Come on, Mike. Time to see if Cabin 13 has improved any in our absence." Chuck's already red face turned puce with embarrassment as Mike stepped around him and followed Rudy down the path towards Cabin 13. He noticed for the first time that Rudy did seem to be limping a little, favoring his left leg. "What did you do to your knee, Rudy?" he asked tentatively as they approached the cabin. "I'm not sure. The prison showers wouldn't have been preferable," was all Rudy replied as they passed the shower block in the middle of the camp. "Just remember not to drop the soap." They walked along the path for another minute or two. When they reached the cabin, Rudy pushed the door open, and they looked into the large, bunk-bed-filled room in silence. "Nope," said Rudy, "no improvement since we left." He stepped in and moved through to the door at the back. Mike crowded up behind him and looked over his shoulder at the small counselor's room. 2 narrow beds filled the room, along with a desk, a tattered armchair, and a couple of shelves on the wall, one of them holding a vast first aid kit. The remainder of the room was bare, except for a large black-and-white photograph of the camp as it must have been in the 1950s. Rudy sauntered into the room, threw his bag on the floor, dropped onto one of the beds, and sighed. "Home, sweet hell. Welcome back to camp, Mike." Mike looked at his friend sprawled out on the dingy orange bedspread, gulped, dropped his own bag at the foot of the other bed. It was going to be a very long summer.